Shlomo HaMelech in Kohelet says eight lachashot ve'eight ledaber. Shlomo HaMelech says there's a time to remain silent and there is a time to speak. Eight lachashot ve'eight ledaber, there's a time to remain silent and a time to speak. And Rashi on the spot says, Eight lachashot pa'amim shadam shotei, there are times that a man remains silent, umekabel schar, and he receives reward, shenema, as it says, after Aaron's two children, Nadav Avi, who was struck down by God, it says, Vayidom Aaron remained silent. So Zohar, shenityached hadibur imo, he was rewarded that God spoke directly to him, and there is, immediately following that, there is a parasha that begins, Vayidaber Hashem al Aaron, God spoke to Aaron, telling him that the Kohen shall not come into the Bet HaMikdash after having had wine or any intoxicating beverage. Then Rashi goes on to say, Ve'et l'daber, there's a time to speak. Oz Yashir Moshe. And I believe that what Rashi is pointing out is that before they went into the Yam Suf, God says to Moshe, Mata Daber, why are you speaking to me? Daber el b'nei Yisrael, lomo titzak elai, why are you crying to me? Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, be so, and let them journey. The time to speak came after the great miracle. And then Batosha Dvorah sings after the victory of Baruch ben Avinoam over the forces of Sisera. And then the third pasuk is the one that Rashi brings from the Haftorah of Parshas Nitzavim, Shabbos Shuvah, this past Shabbos, Vayelech. And it says over there, Tuchui Machem Devarim, take words and return to God. Tuchui Machem Devarim, Veshuvu El Hashem, speak out, tell God. And what are the Jewish people supposed to tell God? They're supposed to tell God, Ashur lo yoshienu, Ashur is not going to save us. Al sus lo nirkov, we're not going to ride on the horses of Egypt. V'lo nomar od lehenu lemaaseh yadenu, and we are not going to deify the work of our hands. We are going to know that everything depends on you. So there's a time to speak, and there's a time to remain silent. One of the first great thoughts of the Brisker Rav I heard in Yeshiva over 50 years ago, and it's on this Gemara, it's a famous vort of the Brisker Rav, and I say that it has also been enshrined already for all eternity, because the Gemara appears in Masechta Sota. Gemara appears in Masechta Sota, and it also appears in Sanhedrin. It appears in Sota and in Sanhedrin, and in the art scroll Chumash, down at the bottom, in the footnotes, they enshrine forever the word of the Brisker Rav. Riva, you are so outnumbered. You are outnumbered 15 to 1. You're a good sport. I like that. The Brisker Rav says the following. Gemara, Sota, number 2. Om Rav Chiya Bar Abba, Om Rav Simoy. Rav Chiya Bar Abba said in the name of Rav Simoy, Shlosha Hoyu Ba'ota Itza. There were three people who were members of Paro's cabinet. When he called the cabinet together to talk about the final solution of the Jewish problem in Egypt, there were three members of the cabinet, and those three members were Bilam, Eov, and Yitro. Bilam Shayatz, Bilam, who advised Paro, throw those Jewish children into the Nile, was punished by being killed. Eov remained silent. Nidon b'Yisurin, he was punished with suffering. He suffered. And when we talk about classic, horrible suffering, we mean the suffering of Eov. Yitro Sheborach, Yitro, who objected to the plan, was opposed to it, and he fled. Zachu mibnei bonot sheyoshu belishkat hakazit. His grandchildren sat as members of the Sanhedrin in the office of the hewn stone on the Har HaBayit. And of course he also became the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. No small accomplishment that. The Brisker Rav asked the following. Once Yitro had fled, who remains? There are three people. Paro, Bilam, Eov. Eov is outnumbered 2-1. There's no way that he's going to carry the day. So there's no point, it would seem, to anything that he's going to say. He's not going to change the minds of Paro and Bilam. So why does he suffer the terrible, terrible, awful, horrible suffering of Eov, the suffering of Eov? So the Brisker Rav said the following. The Gemara says that Eov remained silent. He said it in Yiddish, and it's the only thing that Art Scroll cannot recreate down in its footnote. And the Yiddish is so beautiful. Oy bes tut vei schreit men. If it hurts, you cry ouch. If you stub your toe, you fall and you bang yourself up, do you intellectually decide, well, am I going to cry out or will I not cry out? It's instinctive. Instinctive. Eov remains silent. If it hurts, you don't remain silent. If he remained silent and gave no expression whatsoever to the terrible pain of what's going to be done over here, you know what? It most probably didn't bother him that much. For that silence, he's taught, you're going to learn what it means to cry out. You're going to know what suffering and pain is. Watch what will happen to your children. The Gemara in Megillah number 3 tells us, and I'm not going to read it, I'll just tell you what it says. The Gemara says the following, that because of the humility of Rachel, she was rewarded to have a descendant Shaul, first king of Israel. And because of the humility of Shaul, he had a child generations down the line, Esther. And by humility, the word humility means silence in this case. Here it is, Yaakov speaks to Rachel when he arrives in Padan Aram, tells her he wants to marry her. So Rachel says, I have an older sister, and my father won't let me marry you before my older sister is married. You have to know that my father is a Ramai, he's a deceiver. He's a shrewd and cunning person. To which Yaakov responds by saying, I'm his partner in being cunning. Well, he wasn't his partner in being cunning. The fact is, when the great day comes that Rachel is supposed to be going to the chuppah, the one who goes to the chuppah in her place is her sister Leah. And now Rachel is on the horns of a terrible dilemma. What is she supposed to do? Should she burst out in rage and say, stop, this cannot be? She'll embarrass her sister. She can't do that. Is she going to let her sister go and be embarrassed? Can't do that. Yaakov and Rachel had made up some kind of a code so that they should know who they are. So that if Laban tries anything, they will be able to outsmart him. Rachel made the decision, painful and terrible as it was, to give all of that information over to Leah so that Leah can go to the chuppah in her place. That was her silence. Because of that silence, she was zeche to a descendant called Shaul. Shaul is appointed king appointed and anointed by Shmuel. He had really gone out, he'd left home for a number of days to find donkeys that were lost. When he finally comes home and his uncle asks him, well, what happened? He told him everything about the donkeys. Vez devar hameluch lo higid lo, but he didn't tell him anything about the fact that he had been anointed king. That takes a great deal of great strength. Silence. Psha, it's not important now. Then Esther, of course, who comes from Shaul, Mordechai tells her, don't reveal your lineage or your nation. And Esther refuses. Esther, Eino Magedes, she doesn't say, Amo, her people, family, nothing. Is Rachel always silent? No, Rachel is not always silent. Here was eight lachashot, a time to remain silent. But then there's a time to cry out. And the time to cry out, we learned it, the Haftorah for the second day of Rosh Hashanah. There it is, number four. Ko'amar Hashem, so says Hashem, kol b'romo nishma, a voice is heard on high. Nehi b'chi tamrudim, wailing, bitter crying. What's the sound that's shaking up the world? And God himself hears the terrible sounds. It's Rachel Mevaka Omanoa, Rachel who is crying for her children. May Anoli Hinachem, she refuses to be consoled, Al Bonel Kienenu, about her children who are not. She watches her children being taken into exile, and she cries uncontrollably. Ko'amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Mini Kolech Mi Bechi, restrain your voice from crying, Veinayich Mi Dima, and your eyes from tears, Ki Yesh Sochol Lefulateich, because there is reward for what you've done. Nu'um Hashem V'shavu Me'eretz Oyev, He promises her that her children will return from the land of the enemy. And the next pasuk, He promises V'shavu Banim L'Gvulam, the children will return to their boundary, a promise that He did not make to Avram, to Yitzhak, to Yaakov, to Moshe, to Adam, to Yosef, to David. But Rachel, yes. This is an example of eight ledaber. There is a time to speak out. Rachel knows when there's a time to remain silent, and Rachel knows when there is the time to speak out. Rashi had mentioned in a time to speak out, he mentioned that Tosha Devorah sang. Was Devorah's song only a song, or was there a great deal more in that song? Oy, was there a great deal more? In the middle of that song, she makes an accounting. Who came to assist the Jewish people in their struggle against Sisera, and who remained at home, silent? And she says, V'sorai b'Yisachar im Devorah. The officers of Yisachar were there with Devorah on the battlefield. V'Yisachar came Barak Yisachar with Barak ba'emek shulach v'raglav. In the valley they followed by foot behind Barak. Yisachar was there. But biflagot Reuven gedolim chikike leiv. The withdrawal of Reuven. Oh, this is reason for great thought. This is, we have to contemplate this. What's the question? She asks the question that has to be asked. Lama yoshavta bein ha-mishpatayim? Why did you sit on the boundary? Why didn't you come to take part in the struggle? Why did you remain silent? Jews are in danger. Tragedy may befall them, and you remain silent. Lama yoshavta bein ha-mishpatayim lishmo ha-shrikot adarim, to hear the bleating of the flocks. Remember, Reuven remained on the other side of the Yarden because he had a lot of cattle. Shetzalach! And she paints a picture here of peace and solitude. It's so pastoral. Someplace, you know, out in the hills, the dales, and there is a few kilometers away, there's a terrible battle going on. Jews are in grave danger, and there's Reuven sitting there I would imagine he may be sitting under a tree and he's playing his flute and totally oblivious to what's going on. Lama yashavta bein ha-mishpatayim lishmoa shirikot ha-darim liflagot Ruvain, she repeats. This withdrawal, the remaining behind of Ruvain, gedolim chikrei lev, oy, must we study this. And Gilad remained be'ivar ha-yardein. Gilad be'ivar ha-yardein shochein. Dun was out there in his ships. What's going on over here? This tragedy, this crisis. What are you doing? And in the last pasuk we have Zvulun and Amcheref Nafsholamut. Zvulun endangered his life. He came there and he fought. Naphtali was there. Almerome saw down the heights of the battlefield. He was there. There's a time to remain silent, but there's a time to act. There's a time to act. This drasha was important to me because I'm asking the same question. We here went through a terrible period over the last few months. And the Orthodox world, a large part of the Orthodox world here, and the United States of America, remained silent. Where were they? I said this shiur this morning in the Israel Center, and I must say I was a coward. I didn't mention the OU. In the Israel Center, I should, you know, with their film going, I should say, where was our parent body, the OU? Where was the Rabbinical Council of America? My friends, 1,000 Chabonim, where were they? They weren't on the battlefield. Where was the Haredi community? Our neighbors right here in Hanover, where were they? Where were the great Hasidic houses? Where were they? Unbelievable. Staggers the imagination. Where were they? This was not their struggle. This was not their battle. So I have a friend who lives down, you know, I'm not sure anymore who my friends are. I'm not sure anymore. So here there's a friend of mine who lives down the block. He's the editor of Mishpacha magazine. It's all right, I had to be nice to Mishpacha because about 6-7 weeks ago their Hebrew edition had an article on my wife. And a week ago, the English, the Hebrew one, that was... The Hebrew one was 2 weeks ago. They had an article on my wife and her organization, the Chum, and all of the rest, you know. And we can get in favor of the Haredi community, the number of calls that we got, people who want to take courses to assist others in bereavement counseling, the number of people who wanted to take courses and those who wanted to volunteer, the phone was ringing off the hook. Anyway, he wrote an article a few weeks ago, right after the disengagement, after the Girush. Nichshalnu v'ani nichshalti b'tocha. And then it was translated into English. We have failed, and I have failed together with them. We weren't there for our brethren. It's true, we disagree with them in Hashkafa. But you know, you have to have pity, you have to have mercy. Oh, give me a break, you know. Okay. And then, you know, you write an article, then you feel it's all over, you already said it, can't start up with him anymore. I did write an article, Nichshalnu. I don't understand why the article didn't end up by saying, well, go out and do something now for them, you know. It's not too late. It's not too late today. This is time to remain silent. And there's a time to speak out. We Jews have held it against the Catholic Church that Pope Pius XII remained silent during the course of the Second World War. This summer I read a book entitled Hitler's Pope. It's an unbelievable book. It's in paperback. If you can get your hands on it, read it. There was one single, solitary, pithy statement that the Pope made in a long, boring Christmas message in 1942. About hundreds of thousands of people who've had to move from their homes through no fault of their own. Not a mention of the word Jew, not a mention of the of concentration camps and Cyclone B gas, not a mention of Hitler, Germany, or Nazis. And the world had been waiting and listening to this great speech of the Pope. He remained silent. And that's why the fellow who writes the book arrives at the conclusion, this was Hitler's Pope. He made it so easy for Hitler. Made it so easy. There were crucial moments in the 30s and even in the 40s where a strong word by the Pope would have gotten religious Catholics in all of the countries of the occupation to have reacted with great, great vigor. It would have called upon Catholics to do whatever they can to save Jews. Oy, what that would have, what that could have accomplished. But he remained silent. Well, we didn't get upset with the present Pope. What is he? Benedict the who knows what? Who a few weeks ago spoke about terror in the world, and he mentioned terror in four different countries, and the only place he didn't mention was Israel. Jew has to know. You have to speak out. I don't understand. They didn't speak out. They didn't speak out. I know I'm talking personally. I put in a great deal of effort with American Orthodox organizations. I failed. Nichshalti. I failed. Couldn't get anybody to say a word. All you had was Young Israel. You had Morton Klein of the Religious Zionists of America. Yechidim, individuals. Number five is the Rambam that I've learned with you a number of times. And the Rambam there is expressing the same idea. The Rambam says, therefore, in Hilchos Tshuva he says, every person has to see himself as though he is half innocent, half guilty. In other words, there the scales of justice are absolutely equal. Same number of avedas, same number of mitzvahs. The whole world is precipitously perched at this point, half mitzvahs, half avedas. And therefore a man has to understand his destiny and the destiny of the whole world hangs in the balance. If he does an aveira, he has caused destruction for himself and the whole world. If he does a mitzvah, then he has inclined himself and the whole world for schus, found innocent. Difference one man can make with a word, with a deed, you can make all the difference in the world. People could have done it and they didn't do it. Let's turn over the top of the page. It doesn't say it's a Medrash Tanchuma. This is I must say, listen very carefully to the Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma is going to talk about 8 lachashot, a time to remain silent. The Medrash picks up the story after the brothers have committed one of the great crimes of Jewish history. They have sold their brother Yosef into slavery. Listen carefully to the Medrash and listen to the analysis that's going to come of this Medrash. We're going to take a look at this Medrash, and I think you're going to see very, very beautiful ideas expressed here.
Amru, they said, Nacharim beinenu, let us make a ban of excommunication between ourselves. Shelo yagid echo mimenu leYaakov avinu, that nobody should go tell Yaakov. Let's decide now between us. Nobody is going to tell Yaakov. Amalahem Yehuda, Yehuda said, Ruvain eino kan, Ruvain is not here. Ruvain, remember, was the only one who wanted to save Yosef. He put him in the pit with the intention of coming back and removing him from the pit. But meanwhile, he had to go back home in order to serve his father and take care of his father. So Yehuda says, Ruvain isn't here. You need a minion to establish the validity of the ban of excommunication. We don't have a minion. What are we going to do? Also, what did they do? Shitful HaKadosh Baruch Hu Balto Achedim, they included God as the tenth one to that minion. Do you hear that? Shelo Yagid Lavim, that he shouldn't tell Yaakov. God shouldn't tell Yaakov. Kivin Shiorat Ruven Belayla Loto Abor, that night Ruven went down to the pit, Lahaloto, to bring Yosef up out of the pit below Mitzo, and he didn't find him. Koraz Begodav, he tore his garment to Bocha, and he cried. Chazalei Echov, he came back to his brothers and he said to them, Hayeled einenu v'ani onani bo, the boy is not there. Where will I go? V'ahim zolech gein. He gidu lo et ha-maisa, they told him about the dastardly deed that they had done. They told him what they had done, that hachedim, and they told him that there's a ban of excommunication. Nobody is allowed to say anything to Yaakov. And you know what Reuven did? Shatak. He remained silent. He remained silent. V'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, af al pi shekatuv bo, even though it says about him, Magid Dvarav LeYaakov, he tells things to Yaakov, Dovah Zeh Lo Higid, this he didn't tell him, Mipnei Achedim, because of the ban of excommunication. Lefichach, therefore, Yaakov said, Tarof Toraf Yosef, Yosef has been torn apart because there was nobody to tell him what the truth is. I have two big questions on this medrash. Question number one is the following. I don't know of any halacha that says that you need a minion in order to establish a ban of excommunication. Maybe a bezna of three. Yehoshua made a cherem on all of Israel that they shouldn't take from the spoils of Yericho. I don't know of any halacha that says you need a minion. A minion you need for a davasha begedusha, something of sanctity, kaddish, kedusha, baruch, shemoneser, kriyas haTorah, but not for that. Number two, the Ribbono Shel Olam also becomes part of this evil conspiracy of silence. The Ribbono Shel Olam should be thundering against the terrible evil that has been committed. You sold your brother into slavery and you want me to remain silent too? And the Ribbono Shel Olam joins the minion. What kind of silence is this? Is this good silence? Is this bad silence? Is this the silence of Eov? Or is it the silence of Rachel? Let me explain to you what's going on over here. I always imagine to myself, what happens if there would not have been a ban of excommunication? They'd come home. Father would make the decision that, you know, Yosef has been torn apart. Day in, day out, they would see the pain, the mourning, the terrible suffering of a father. How long do you think it would take until somebody cracks? How long do you think it will take until somebody is going to reveal the ugly secret? Now, who would be the one to crack first? And how would he say it? My guess is, the first one to crack is somebody who feels that he was not guilty of the crime. Number two, you know what he would say? Pa, You know what he did? You know what they did? You know what would happen? What would happen is this family would most probably destroy itself from within to the point that you could never have a Klal Yisrael ever again. They would tear each other apart. How do I know that that could have happened? Take a look at the Rashi. Right after the story, it says in the Torah, Yehuda went down from his brothers. Rashi says, Lama nismacha parsha zulikan. Why is the parsha of Yehuda going down from his brothers here? V'hifzik the parsha tosh she Yosef, and it interrupts the parsha of Yosef. L'lamed, in order to teach us, shehoridu echov migedulaso, his brothers brought him down from his greatness. Kisharo b'tzoras avim, when they saw the suffering of the father. Amru, they said, ato amato l'makro, you said we should sell him. Ilo amato l'ashivo, would you have said that we should take him back home? Hayinu shomim l'cha, we would have listened to you. It had already begun. They're blaming Yehuda. They're blaming Yehuda. But they can't say anything to Yaakov because there's a cherem. If there wouldn't have been a cherem, they would be blaming one another. You see, if you get the Jerusalem Post on Monday, well, you know, you don't have to get it. Whatever is important in the Jerusalem Post, you'll find out for me. So here it was, a week ago, the New York Times supplement, the News of the Week in Review, they had a half a page, I think it was Daf 9 on base. They had a half a page in which they had pictures, I think 7 or 8 pictures, beginning with Bush at the top, the mayor of New Orleans, the governor of Louisiana, the heads of different government agencies, and they have arrows going from one to the next, the statements that each one said, blaming the next one. At the top of the page it says the blame game. When I first said pshat in this medrash, I wrote an article about it and I called it the blame game. They would have torn themselves apart to the point that there would never be a Klal Yisrael that could put together a minyan to say Kaddish or Kedusha. Do you know what sanctity requires now? That we keep this Klal Yisrael together. You need a minyan for the davar shepigedusha of holding the family together. That's what the minyan is necessary for. Because at this point in time, the holiest of all ideas is the ability to keep this family together. If they could talk, they would blame one another. And nobody except Reuven is blameless. There were those who actively sold him, and what did the others do? Did they demonstrate? They remained silent. They're equally guilty. Why does the Rabbeinu Shalom join this unholy alliance? So the fact is, it occurs to me now, something I didn't say on Shabbos, that for the Rabbeinu Shalom to keep Klal Yisrael together is also of prime importance. He wants that family to stay together. That's why he becomes the 10th one to the minyan. But in addition to that, the Rabbeinu Shalom knows whenever this, the time comes that people are handing out blame for a terrible tragedy that occurred, there's always going to be somebody who's going to say, and where was God? Where was God? What? He was silent? Why did he do something? Where was God in Auschwitz? Where was God while Yosef is being sold into slavery by his brothers? Where's God? God knows when the hand of God blame, he's going to get it too. And that's Chilul Hashem. He's going to be part of a minyan that is going to sanctify a Klal Yisrael and sanctify God's name. And they were right. The Cherem saved Klal Yisrael. For 22 years they remained silent. 22 years later, they're standing in the presence of a fellow called Tzafnas Paneach, who accuses them of being spies. And all of a sudden, they break 22 years of silence. Vayomru ish el achiv, number 8. Each one said to his brother, Avol Hashemim anachno. We are guilty. Alochinu about our brother. Asher ro'inu tzoras nafsho. We saw the tzora of his soul. Bitchananu eleinu, when he pleaded with us. Velo shamanu, and we didn't listen. Al kein bo eleinu hatzora hazos. That's why this tzora has come. You know what this means? Another extremely important idea that is expressed by the Medrash Tanchuma. If they are able to blame one another, not only do they destroy the family, they destroy any possibility of ever being able to do tshuva. Because if I can blame somebody else, I'm blameless. All tshuva begins with my ability to say, I made a mistake. I was wrong. If they can blame one another, they will never, ever reach the point at which they can do tshuva. Because they can't speak out. So 22 years later, they say, Avol Hashemim anachnu, we're guilty. The only thing that they can imagine, why is this false accusation, an accusation by the viceroy of Egypt that they are spies? It can only be for that avera. We're guilty. We didn't hear the cry of our brother. And finally, Reuven, who's been controlling himself for 22 years, Vayan, Reuven, Vayomer, and Reuven responded, and he answered them, Lemar, Halo Amarti Alechem, I told you. Halo Amarti Alechem, Lemar, I said, remember my words? Al techetu bayeled, I told you, don't sin with this child. Velo shamatim, and you didn't listen. Vegam domo hinei nidrash. His blood is being demanded of us. The silence made it possible for them to do tshuva. If there would not have been silence, they would have destroyed each other. Now, pasuk later it says, well, they didn't know that Yosef hears and understands, because the interpreter was there. Vayisov ma'aleim vayef, he turned away and he cried, and then he comes back to them and he speaks to them, and he took Shimon from them, and he incarcerated Shimon in their eyes. Big question over here is, Yosef is crying. You know what he's heard? He's heard his brothers doing tshuva. He's heard his brothers do tshuva. Hashem anachnu al achinu v'sareinu, our brother. We didn't hear, we didn't listen to him. Yosef hears them regret terribly what they had done to him. Why doesn't he reveal himself? You know why he doesn't reveal himself? Because Yosef knows a Rambam. The Rambam says that real tshuva, the pinnacle, the peak of tshuva is when a person finds himself in the exact same situation as he had been before, and he no longer makes the same mistake. And you know what Yosef did? Yosef wanted to give his brothers the opportunity to do tshuva. And he takes Shimon and incarcerates Shimon. And you know what he's waiting for? He's waiting for them to say, no, you can't have him. We're going to fight. We're not going anyplace. We're not leaving a fellow Jew behind. And you know what happens? They fail. Do you know who is more despondent about their failure than anybody else? Yosef. And you know what Yosef has to do? He has to recreate the same test all over again. You can't come to see me unless you have Binyamin. They come down the next time, they bring Binyamin. He puts his cup in the baggage of Binyamin. He frames him. They bring him back. Yosef says, I'm taking Binyamin, he's going to be my slave forever. The tension is breaking. he has set up the same situation all over again. Will they fail again? Vayigash Elav Yehuda. And Yehuda comes over. Rashi says, he's ready for war. He says, no, you can't have Binyamin. I'll stay in his place. You're not going to keep this child. Eich ele el avi. No, how can I go up to my father without this child? Yehuda must think that he's scaring the wits out of this Tzafnas Paneach. What he doesn't know is that there is such joy coursing through Yosef. The Bnei Shalom, thank God, they didn't fail again. They're not going to leave a Yiddish kind behind. If he could, he'd cover his hand, his face, and start smiling. Maybe even laugh. Take it easy. Don't get so tough. Don't give me the scare tactics. I'm not afraid of you. He's thrilled because he hears them saying, we're not going to leave the Yiddish kind behind. Which means not only have they said, Aval Hashemim Anachnu, you know what they've done? They face the same situation again, and they're not going to let the same terrible thing happen again. That's Tshuva Shleima. Yehuda knows when to speak out. They knew when to remain silent, and they knew when to speak. Vayihi Macharos, number nine, Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people, after the sin of the Egel, Atem Chatosim Chato Gdolo, you have sinned a great sin. Now, El El Hashem, I'm going to go up to God. Ulay Achap Robat Chataschem, maybe I will find forgiveness for your sin. Vayoshav Moshe Al Hashem, Moshe returned to God and he said, Onochoto Ha'om Azeh Chato Gdolo, this people have sinned a great sin. Vayasu Lehem Elehezov, they made a golden calf. How does Moshe say this? The 3,000 people who had worshipped the Egel have already been punished. They've been killed. And what's a chato anyway? You ever heard of the word chato? You have the word here twice. I don't think it appears anyplace else in Tanakh. What's this chato business? You know what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying? 3,000 people danced around the Egel. There were 2 million Jews. What did you do? What did you do? Did you demonstrate? Did you have the orange bands all over you? What did you do? You remained silent. That's a chatah. You remained silent. There's the sin of commission when you do an aveira, and there's the sin of omission when you remain silent when an aveira is being done. And you know what indicates a sin of omission? A hey. Chatah. How do I know that? Because in number 10, when a man is found dead between two cities, Sanhedrin has to measure off to the closest city. And the elders of the city have to bring a calf down into a valley and chop off its head. And they're va'onu va'omru, and they have to lift their voices and say, Yodenu lo shafchu es adam azeh. Our hands did not spill this blood. Do you see how shafchu is spelled? No other place in Tanakh is it spelled with a hay at the end. And who are we talking about? Rashi immediately says, what do you mean the elders of the city are saying we didn't spill this blood? V'chiyol al dat? Did it ever occur to anybody that the elders of the city are the murderers over here? No. You know what they're saying? We didn't see him and let him go without aid and assistance and food and shelter and water. We did not commit the sin of omission. We didn't remain silent. A yid had needed a place where to stay, we took care of him. Two final, one is a pasuk, and one is a great vort. The pasuk is a scary, frightening pasuk. I think we have to say it over and over again. Take it home with you and learn this pasuk. Otem ozno mizaka dal, the one who closes his ears from the cry of the poor. Gam hu yikrov lo yeoneh. He will call out to God and he's not going to be answered. Midah keneged midah, measure for measure. I wonder, but many people how I know, that I know how they're going to stand up and say, Shema Koleinu Hashem Elokeinu, hear our voices. What are you talking about, hear our voices? Did you listen to the voices of those who called out to you from Gush Katif? What are you talking about? You closed your ears. You didn't hear. What did you do? Nichshalnu. Sorry, we failed. Me, you failed. Otem ozno mizakas dal gam hu yikrov lo yeyaneh. Frightening puzzle. You close your ears, God is not going to listen to your plea either. And then the last, number 12, this is something my wife took off the internet some years ago, and you know where it goes after it comes off the internet. Where does it go? Everybody should know already. Where does it go? She prints it out, and where does it go? Onto the fridge. Alright? And then, after it was on the fridge, I have a little address book in which I write all my important addresses. I say that I don't use a Palm Pilot or a Blackberry or a Blueberry or a Heen. I don't know how to use these newfangled things. I have a little book. I'm on my second one now. The other one is almost falling apart. And I write addresses, and on the outside of that book, I put this quotation from Edmund Burke. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. A lot of good men did nothing, and evil triumphed. So I have it on my little book, and I have it there. By the way, you can take it home and cut it out and paste it wherever you want to paste it. It's okay with me. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Eight lachashot, there's a time to remain silent. Eight ledaber, there's a time to speak out. Eov was silent when he should have spoken. Rachel was silent when she should have been silent, and she spoke out when she should have spoken out. Reuven? Nope. He was quite ready to let the evil triumph. Let evil triumph. The brothers knew to remain silent when silence was indicated, where silence was holy. And they also knew to speak out when the moment came to say, Avol Hashemim Anachnu Alochinu B'sareinu. Yehi Ratzon that everybody should be zeicha to a gemach simateva. And I think more than anything else, what's important now is, I don't think that Gush Katif was necessarily the last. That might have been Shimon. We may be faced again with Binyamin. And if we're faced again with Binyamin, we had better know how to speak out with strength, b'nechishut, with great determination. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us all a good gesunte year, to be a year of Shalom on Yisrael, because it's a scary world out there. It's a very, very scary world. Very scary world. Gemach Simateva, everyone. Tzom Kal, everybody.
And to you.
Your cousin from where? Worcester, Massachusetts?
Yeah,
yeah, we forget that, yes.
So, she knows who's your brother. She sent me to you because they talk about a couple in the relationship with Shura, I think your brother had. She knows who's your brother, true.
Yeah?
You
want it back?
I'll get it back. All right, okay.
Shari Parrish, I remember the shoe, he's the down there.
Because Shari Parrish, I was in Worcester. My father came to Worcester from America. When he came to America,
yes.
He went to Worcester. His father's brother was a rabbi.
Shari Torah marks a century of Jewish history. Providence Street. Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, if you want to give it back.
I'll give it back to you.
Okay, fine.
Okay, Gemara Tovah.